101.1, the Sunday edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, with special guest Sally Zinman. And who knows, we could also have a public defender in the studio. We'll see. Stay with us.
So what happens when push comes to shove and you want to do your thing and other people want their thing done to you? Well, you become an outlaw. This is called Desperado Blues.
I ain't no outlaw, but pay no fee. My spirit's willing, but these habits, they run deep. Ain't the bad guy, I didn't shoot anyone, but you got me running like a lesbian without law. You got me hiding in the shadows. Been a long, long time since I've seen the sun. Your work that never stops. It's a trail well ridden, never takes you to the top. I don't want to change things, just the right to choose. But you got me singing those desperado blues. Thank you. like an outlaw, singing desperado blues.
Hard to get a job right now living in my vehicle. I have nowhere to shower. All the public bathrooms are being watched or closed. You know, it's just insane. I have nowhere to shower. You know, I'm going crazy. I can cook inside, but to find water to fill my jugs, it's just insane. I can't find any place to go. It's not safe.
And we'd like to thank our Safe and Sane powers that be in Santa Cruz for helping create the homelessness that they seem to abhor. They've taken my property, made it impossible for me to lead a decent life here, and then they arrest me for camping.
Thank you, Jim.
Good.
Hey, where's my hut?
I like it.
Looking good.
Say that again.
For the last 3 years, we've been clean and sober, changed our lives, and every penny that we make goes into the system. We have no way to live, you know, like as a decent human being, indoors with hot showers, you know, and privacy.
You know, we need to find alternate ways of living, and I don't know. I know I was listening to an interview earlier today about squatting, taking over housing that is abandoned, and it should be used. Now, they do that in New York City with abandoned buildings, and I'd like to see it done here.
See it done with some of these big high-rise buildings, office buildings that are empty, and they keep building more, and there's people living all over the street, and nothing's being used. It's just insane.
Get a squat together in Santa Cruz, and I'll join you.
Okay, you tell me how, and I'll start looking. I'll research it. You tell me what to do.
Come to a Huff meeting next Wednesday and propose it, and we'll see what we can do. Huff is, you know, 8:30 at Baker Square, 1107 Ocean,
okay,
on Wednesday in the morning.
On Wednesday next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's also a street performers meeting tonight, 8 o'clock, SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom of Expression, at the Union Street Cafe at 6 o'clock.
Thanks.
Thank you. It's about 8:05 on Wednesday evening, the 19th of November, 2003, and outside the still vacant storefront, used for the Cooper House, GelatoManiaDesserts.com is coming, and we have a portable piano, two guitars, and a third person with a guitar case here on the streets playing. Jay is singing on the guitar, and Jay was, of course, part of the SAFE meeting earlier, meeting of this Society of Artistic Freedom of Expression, which met at the Union Street Cafe. And they got together a union mission statement, preparing to support folks who are being harassed under the downtown ordinances, street performers. I have a hearing coming up in 2 days.
Bravo!
And this looks like an illegal display device. I'm going to have to take you into custody.
I know, it's a totally illegal display device.
But I perhaps have to display a quarter in response. There's 26, 31 cents on how you're going to manage that. But, what's the name of this group? Is
Three Amigos.
Tres Amigos, the...
It's called Waiting for Her to Sing a Song. That's the name.
What's your name?
Hey there.
Who?
Hey there. How you doing?
No, waiting for Hey There to Sing a Song.
Yeah. How you doing?
How you doing?
So we'll be waiting longer here and hearing some music while we wait.
You're going to go?
Yeah. And there's a guitarist playing at one of the benches across the street. Another guitarist in front of the Cinema 9, another illegal position. The guitarist, of course, is illegal because he's seated on the bench. And the Cinema 9 person is illegal because he's closer than 10 feet his display device. And Christmas lights are lighting up the avenue, wrapped around trees. It isn't quite cold yet, but the air is turning wintry. And how's it going? Good. rolling a cigarette on the avenue, are we? Any comments about the Pacific Avenue scene or free radio?
It's nice. I like it. I like it. I'm here a lot.
No hassles from the local police?
No, I don't get any problems.
Well, you have a mellow look about you.
I seem to like it.
Are you living outside or inside?
I have a dwelling.
You're not one of the H-word type people?
Not really.
What's your name?
Dan.
Dan, a long-time local, or?
Well, I've been here back and forth. I originally moved here in 1970.
And you've been commuting?
No, I don't commute. I moved away for a while for other work.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm a chef, but I'm no longer a chef.
A former chef?
Former chef.
I'm still a chef. But you haven't got your saucepans with you, I notice.
No.
But you have quite a nice hat with a very interesting white feather in it, but believe it be. Any final comments for the folks out there in Radio Land?
No, not really.
What I'm actually doing is I just came from a meeting of SAFE, the Society for Artistic Freedom of Expression, which is the street performers who are trying to kind of restore the rights of people to perform on the streets, which have been removed by the local ordinances.
Yeah, they have. I've had a lot of, actually, some of the residents have asked me to leave.
Some of the residents have asked you to leave? Because you smoke too much, or what?
No, because I was playing my flute out there in front of the bookstore.
Oh, so you're not only a former chef, but you're a criminal flautist as well.
Exactly.
You're flouting authority?
Right.
And when were you doing this criminal flute behavior?
This last week.
And what happened?
Some residents came out and told me to leave. They asked me, they says, could you move down the street a little bit?
Were they commenting on the lack of quality of your performance, or?
Not at all.
What was their problem? They didn't like the way you were looking, or?
No, they just didn't want to hear the noise. They call it noise.
And this was on the corner of where the cinema is there, or?
No, it was in front of the bookstore.
Oh, the
bookstore Santa Cruz.
The bookshop Santa Cruz. But that's one of the famous exemption zones where you're supposed to be able to perform.
I always have there.
And was this an employee of one of the places, or what was it?
I think so.
And what time of day was it?
It was in the evening, about 7 at night.
Did they claim they were not a resident, an elderly person trying to sleep at the St. George or something like that?
No, none of that.
And what was your response to this rude awakening?
Well, I informed them. I said I was within my rights to play there, but I left anyway.
So you didn't say, fuck off and die and continue to play?
No, I didn't.
Which might have been the more appropriate.
That's what was going through my mind.
So is that the only place or time you've been given the hassle in Santa Cruz? I notice you don't have your flute with you, apparently.
It's on my back.
Oh, you do have your flute. Are you going to risk the ire of locals by playing again?
Playing down there.
You're playing at Borders?
Palomar.
Yeah. How did that go?
Fine. I played there a few nights, you know, and no problems there.
This is simply to express yourself in the open air, or are you seeking funding, or both?
Both. But I enjoy playing. This is a good place to play.
Have you found it's gotten more friendly in the last year, less friendly, stayed the same?
A little less, I think.
And were you playing a couple of years ago when they still had the voluntary street performers guidelines?
Yes, I was.
And was that a friendlier scene for you?
Yeah, I think it was, pretty much, yeah.
Or was there no appreciable difference?
Not to me that much, because I don't seem to be affected by it. I play a really mellow, soft instrument, and it doesn't seem to disturb anybody.
Except for certain people near the bookshop Santa Cruz.
Exactly. Exactly.
We've been talking with
Dan.
Dan of the flute and the saucepan.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you, Dan. Why do you play, Dan? You were just telling me a moment ago.
Because I enjoy it, and I feel like I'm bringing pleasure to humanity.
You like having an audience.
Oh, and I love to have an audience, of course.
Me too.
Well,
okay. What kind of an instrument is that? It looks like a huge guitar, but it's... What is that instrument you have, sir?
Guitarón.
Guitarón.
Mariachi instrument.
Okay, I'm... Cool. Well,
That guy with the piano.
Some guy dragged a piano.
Yeah, I noticed that. Is it kind of, I guess it's gone now. There's a lone, Jay, the lone guitarist up there is carrying on. Well, I'm going to...
I was playing right over here. And then the piano came by, so I was put out of business.
So you were... And of course, that was one of the purposes of the Street Performers Guidelines was to kind of encourage people to space voluntarily different...
Well,
I guess that happens naturally.
One of the things is, for the most part, most of the musicians around here have courtesy and won't play
right
where somebody else is already playing.
Have you been in a number of other cities, or...?
Yeah, I played, flew in Colorado, Denver, and I like to play in this little town called Manitou Springs.
Colorado?
Outside of Colorado
Any
Springs.
Any other places in California?
Our town. No, not really. Not
Santa Cruz is a particularly congenial place, or you just sort of familiar to you, or
I have played in Jamestown.
Jamestown is what, Virginia?
No, Jamestown in the Gold Country.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with it, but I plenty of little towns I know about.
Yeah, it's up by Sonora. I played up there.
But you don't kind of come to a town and just whip out your flute and start playing it?
No, I don't do that. No, I'm not like... But I would. I'm capable of doing that.
Well, I expect to hear in the future that you have broken new ground for street performers.
Oh, thank you.
Certainly. As a SAFE member, Society for Artistic Freedom of Expression, we want to make sure you spread the word.
I do. I always do.
Excellent. More reports for free radio, perhaps? Anything happening on the streets? What's your name?
My name is Keith.
Keith, what's cooking out here that we should know about that we don't?
Well, right now, all the youngsters that were here earlier, about a week ago, are like gone. They went back home to mommy and daddy. And all I see out here now are the people that are for real, that actually live here, like me. I live about 200 yards away from the spot that we're...
Are you outdoors yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pursued by police or ignored by police?
Yeah, I get harassed. But
any tickets recently?
Oh, I've got 4 of them in my pocket.
What period of time did you get them?
In the last month, I've got these 4 stupid tickets.
And these were for?
Camping, sleeping outside, and sleeping over by the library, sleeping, just being with, a couple of them were with buddies that have, you know, open containers, like, you know, and I wasn't, you know...
You weren't drunk and crazy.
No, no. Oh, no, heck no. No, no. It was just, and I've tried and tried 4 times to go to the Supreme Court to take care of this, and they keep saying, well, it's not in the system. It's not in the system.
We've got to wait at least 2 or 3 weeks for it.
No. I'm talking tickets from September that are still not in the system yet.
Get a statement
yet
from the clerk that you've been to the window. They're supposed to fill that little one that said, make sure you do that next time you go. Because again,
I'm highly disappointed and very, very discouraged about this whole...
As a consolation prize, they offer you a piece of cinnamon gum.
Well, sure, because I...
No, you smell fine. I have no problem with that. I thought you might.
I'm very, very...
I mean, I tell you...
I want to swear, but I don't know.
As a Christian, I'd have to arrest you. You know, I can't allow swearing. Free radio has a very strict censorship policy. No saying fuck, piss, shit, cocksucker, motherfucker, or tits.
I'm highly pissed off.
Exactly. At
this justice system here in Santa Cruz County.
Well, you're very charitable without a justice system.
Well, isn't that what it's supposed to be? I just got out of prison. I spent 6 years in state penitentiary for a violent felony that I committed, you know, and I did something bad.
Okay. You regard yourself as a menace to society?
Hell no. Hell no. I'm a decent man. I'm as gentle as the little ant that you see crawling on that space.
You think prison has made you more gentle, less gentle, or just not affected you?
No. Prison made me a lot wiser,
if anything. What did you learn? Can you say anything about
that? Oh, shit, yeah. I can say something about that. I can say that it made me learn respect for another man, no matter what color you are. If I got anything out of my 6 years in state penitentiary, it's respect. I learned respect for a man of black, white, yellow, red, no matter what. I learned that one.
What penitentiary were you in? What prison?
San Quentin State Prison.
Hefty prison.
San Quentin State Prison, yeah.
Now, 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I just got out.
And are you facing any consequences, like having to register and all that?
No, I max out. I'm off parole. I stayed there for the whole duration. So I have a discharge card in my pocket. I'm off parole. I'm as squeaky clean as... I'm as squeaky clean
as the uptown models.
Yeah, it's her, right there.
Okay. Are you having trouble finding work? Looking for work.
At one time, I'm in the mental health system, and I'm
SSI-ish, ATD.
No, not SSI, but SDI, state disability. I'm in a doctor's care, so.
But you don't have enough money to rent a place here because you're outdoors.
No money. How much money do I have?
How do you get your next meal, for example? What do you intend to do to get fed?
Well, what I do is I rely on my friends here on the street, and they help me.
So your last meal, where did it come from?
The last food I ate came from a church group, a Christian.
Was it out here on the street tonight?
No, it was this morning, actually. It was Elm Street Mission. It was the last place.
You use the Homeless Resource Center, though, the Homeless Service Center.
How are they?
How are they?
Oh, it's beyond words. I don't know what I'd do without that.
What about the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program? Do you use that? The Emergency Shelter Program?
I don't know. What's that?
It's part of the Homeless Service Center.
You mean that church group that those guys go to?
Well, it's not really a church. It is. You get into it, you line up out there at 4 o'clock, and, you know, that's...
No.
That doesn't...
No. No, that don't fly with me.
Because
I like to go to the beach, I like to stay out here, I like to go to the library, I want to feel like I have some kind of a life, and I don't want to have to go up there and be there by 3 or 4 o'clock every single day. And so I do got a blanket stashed in the bushes up within 200 yards of where we're speaking, and I got it hidden, and I just prefer... you know, I tough it out, and but the thing is, I'm 53 years old, and I'm getting real, real tired, and I'm afraid that I just got a flu shot, which was the smartest thing I did last week. But I'm afraid I'm going to get sick out there. You know, I mean, like guys my age, you know, we just can't. I ain't no kid, and try my best and try and survive out here.
Is this what brought you to Santa Cruz?
I was asked to leave Santa Cruz.
Asked to leave Santa Cruz? By who and when?
California Department of Corrections, CDC.
Really?
Told me to leave. They made me leave.
When was this?
This was 1998.
And what was the reason they had for asking you to leave?
Because I made contact with the victim of the crime that I had committed.
The assault thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I have since maxed out, spent my time, 6 years, and
prison. Never recontacted the victim?
No, no. And so I got my discharge card in my pocket, and now I'm a free man. I'm as squeaky clean as you are.
Well, don't say that you don't know. If you knew that.
Well, I don't know if you're squeaky clean or not, but whatever.
Hey, we've been talking with...
Pardon?
We've been talking with...
Keith Young.
Keith, any words out there for the listeners?
No. If this is for real, if you're for real, all I can say is I have one thing and only one thing to say to anyone, and this is my like live motto, and that is an old Shakespeare quote, and that to thine own self be true.
Then it must follow as the night, the day, thou canst not then be false to any man. Thank
bottom
you, Keith.
Line, bottom line.
So we're here talking to an off-duty panhandler who is seated near the Rittenhouse wall on Pacific Avenue. Do you wish to identify yourself, or shall we keep it anomalous?
I am Vitaltis Flankins.
And you normally you're a man who panhandles quite openly and regularly on the side street.
Well, not just true in the daytime. I do that cuckoos.
Yet here you are leaning against your backpack, which is leaned against several trash cans, not blocking the sidewalk, of course, but you have no sign or cup in front of you. You simply seem to be sitting here less than 10 feet from the fence, but since it's a fence and not a building, you are within the confines of the sitting law and outside the forbidden zone.
I have my friend Jay with me tonight. I am enjoying the... I'm trying to be low-key. I could get a ticket.
You could get a ticket, but for what? You're not actually asking for change after dark, a crime, and also a crime from a seated position, I might add, so that would be two strikes against you.
You have forgotten one.
What is that?
I am hiding behind the trash can also. I'm concealing my panhandling.
Concealed panhandling without a permit behind a trash can. You know, you're really kind of racking up the stats here.
Exact moods. No give me morse. No morse.
Are people responding to this, or are they seeing you as a sort of a would-be panhandler?
My eyes look like they've been punched.
Not
both of them.
Recently?
Oh, all day long. Two hits each day.
They're punching your tickets?
Don't sort of telling me, you get out of here. Go find fish. I don't want a fish. I want money.
There you go.
Ooh, give me $2 for that insult.
Well, are you in sort of the human punching bag?
I've been known to break bottles over people's heads, and then my karma comes and eats at me later. And I've been beaten savagely for it by the cops.
Our police officers?
Those bastards.
Now, are you making a fanciful story designed to instill sympathy in the listeners so that we will shower coins upon you?
And also by my biography, yes.
Well, of course, we'll be talking to you about that when that comes up. We want to thank you. We've been speaking with...
My daughter, one person.
Thank you so much.
No. How are you doing, Robert? I didn't make the meeting this morning. I was up and I was there, but they told me that there wasn't any meeting. And
really?
Yeah.
What time did you show up?
I was there at 8:15.
And you walked up to the Downtown Association headquarters,
second floor.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You've been listening to some tapes from last month, November. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I am the bathrobe. I don't have my robe with me, but tomorrow I probably will. That's when we're going to be out there doing some homeless Christmas caroling, or some, should we say, reality Christmas caroling. That's at 1 o'clock at the town clock for all you carolers who want to come. Joe Schultz is going to be providing some hot, I think this time it's going to be a punch rather than a stew, but I'm not entirely sure what's happening. Tomorrow, as some of you listeners may know, this is the day of the reading of the names of the homeless dead. Every year we lose homeless people on the streets. Dan White and the coroner would say it's not because of exposure. Oh no, nothing like that. But in fact, of course, the life expectancy of people on the streets is much diminished from those who are indoors and have some kind of regular housing or even irregular housing. So the reading of the names of the dead happens at 10:30 in the morning at 115 Coral Street. For those who are interested in being present there, Mayor Scott Kennedy will perhaps make an appearance. Squawk Box Scott, as I've oh, I don't know, satirically called him on occasion. I've called him different things over the years. He's been mayor once before. He was mayor during the time of the first downtown ordinances. He helped to pass them, the law that sets up forbidden zones all along the street. A Pacific Avenue makes it illegal to ask for a dime after dark. Initially made it illegal to sit on the sidewalk anywhere, producing the police riots when people peacefully but vigorously protested by sitting down at Cathcart and Pacific in May of 1994. Kennedy is mayor again, and as usual, of course, he, like mayors before him and like he did in 1994, has provided no additional shelter for homeless people this winter, no emergency shelter for homeless people this winter, nor has he moved to suspend the sleeping or camping bans in any areas of the city that would, of course, allow people to legally and get together to protect themselves by making their own, well, at least sleeping, being able to sleep legally without a $54 fine after 11 o'clock at night, which is our municipal code. 6.36010A makes it illegal to sleep at night, 11 to 8:30. Nor has he allowed people to camp, which they do anyway, of course, in distant places, 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people every night in the Santa Cruz city limits areas, and I estimate from 6,000 to 10,000 people in the county do this as well. We're talking also about in vehicles, where it's also illegal to fall asleep at night, where it's also illegal to shelter yourself from the elements if your eyes close after 11 o'clock at night. And, of course, Kennedy, who co-founded the Resource Center for Nonviolence and expresses a great interest and concern about Palestinian rights, has come out after initially opposing the sleeping ban in favor of the sleeping and camping ordinances. Actually, here, first he opposed them, then he stood on both sides of them, depending on what time of day and what group you talked to him. That was in 1996. And now he, of course, is a supporter of those anti-poor laws that I think Gandhi would have been scandalized by. But of course, here's a man who I believe claims to be guided by Gandhi, but that's what happens when you really get guided by political ambition and you allow the politics of the situation to take over. I know my friend Richard Quigley would tell me that I'm too judgmental of these politicians, that you should never really judge them unless you've walked a mile in their shoes. Perhaps, but I really think our responsibility, and perhaps Quigley would say this as well, our responsibility is to judge politicians, because they're there to represent the community, and they're there with a lot of power in the community, at least in terms of the governmental structure, that most of us don't have. So they have a particular responsibility, and it's particularly appropriate to judge them. So I guess it's a little different from judging Kennedy is a private citizen. I don't really judge him as a private citizen. His private life is his own affair. It's his public life that concerns me. His pretensions, his as mayor, his statements about being progressive, his claims to be concerned about human rights. One must really examine these very closely. And I know it may seem overkill when you bring down the hammer and say this is hypocrisy, this is horseshit, but frankly, that's what I do, and I will continue to do so as long as I see that isn't in fact the case. And if you wish to sound in yourself on these issues, you're welcome to. That's what this show is about. We go till 1 o'clock. The phone number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. We are broadcasting at 96.3 and 101.1 FM and on the internet at www.freakradio.org. By chance, you want to get more information about the radio station itself, possibly become a broadcaster or maybe donate something to the station, or you have a public service announcement you want to make, you can leave a message on the voicemail at 427-4523, 427-4523. Again, we're in area code 831 for all of you out-of-towners who happen to be listening. And you may be, because we broadcast at 91.3 in Free Radio via Free Radio Olympia on occasion, and at 87.9 FM up at Point Arenas Pirate Radio, and then in Seattle at Post World Radio at 87.9 FM, according to the hangings on the wall here, which I think are probably pretty accurate. I suspect they are. I haven't researched them myself, but I suspect that's the case. And Free Radio Santa Cruz, I believe, is still looking for a new location. So if you have a building, a studio, actually, with the following six requirements, the following six attributes, we can use it. The studio's got to have its own entrance. It's got to have access to a bathroom 24 hours a day. It's got to have electricity and be DSL compatible. It's got to be waterproof and has to be secure. That is to say, we have to be able to lock the studio. And we have to have about 100 square feet. We can pay the rent and the bills. Please call us at 427-4523 and let us know, because we need that space and we're looking for it. If you want to get in touch with homeless activists around the issues I'm raising on the air, at least homeless activists with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, you can call the HUF line at 423-HUF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. There's also a HUF website, although I've been having a little trouble accessing it lately. It's www.huffsantacruz.org, all one word, small letters, huffsantacruz.org. Haven't been able to get through in the last day or two, but usually it's up, so I'm hoping that it will be when you call. Ah, looks like we got a caller now. Let's see who's calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I want to talk to Benny.
You want to talk to Benny?
Yes.
You are Benny.
No, I want to talk to Benny.
No, he's not here. Sorry. So, I think that's one of them shout-out calls that I've heard about, where they simply call the station and kind of see if they can get on the air and announce somebody else's name. But I could be wrong. And if you got something you want to say, caller, about something that's happening on the air, or something you think other people would be interested in knowing about on the air, please call again and we'll talk about it. 427-3772 is the number to call. We didn't get through much of the, or actually all we were supposed to get through last Thursday. I also do the show on Thursdays, 6 to 8 in the evening, in case you want to tune in next Thursday. I did have a great interview with Richard Quigley, who, as you may know from having read yesterday's Santa Cruz Sentinel front page, has filed a lawsuit against Mark Tracy, the sheriff. Mark Tracy is... I actually have the lawsuit with me, so I may be doing a little reading from it, although it's kind of dry. The actual wording of the lawsuit is not terribly exciting. In fact, I may ask, however, if I can get Attorney Kate Wells on a Sunday. She's the attorney filing it on the air. I will do that, and perhaps that's what I'm going to do, and we'll kind of pick it up from there. It looks like the public defender, Charlie Stevens, is not going to be coming in, or maybe he is, but he's late, and he hasn't called back. So we have had Charlie on the air before. He's a public defender who's given us some interesting information about how things operate in the public defender's office, or the public pretender's office, as some call it. But I haven't heard from him, and I guess he's going to be missing his appointment here, but we'll see. Let's hear this, and then, who knows, maybe we'll get some more information about the Quigley lawsuit.
I can't give my brother all clean syringe if he should get AIDS and die. It's just too bad. My senator says I can't give my sister all clean syringe, she should get hepatitis and die. It's just too bad. The president says I can't give my brother all clean syringe if he should get hepatitis and die. It's just too bad. The policeman says I can't give my sister all clean syringe, she should get AIDS and die. It's just too bad. My county supervisor likes to think he's so much wiser than all the doctors put together. We say we can give away clean syringes. My city councilman says it's not a problem. We're only gonna spend millions on treatment that won't work for people who will die. My community is like the claim immunity on the basis of homophobia and a lack of medical facts. Hey America, there's needle use of sleeping with your children, with your daughters, with your sons, with your husband.
you can own a needle without a prescription. Could you really think that I kept anyone from shooting up? All the politicians say can't legalize exchange because that would be sending the wrong message. Did you ever notice? On every billboard, every magazine, every corner store, on every city street, messages by demons and alcohol. And don't you know drugs are everywhere, drugs are everywhere, drugs are everywhere, you can't stop it. Fertilizer, make a profitable insurance, one company. Drugs are everywhere, drugs are everywhere, drugs are everywhere, you can't stop it. It's not a law enforcement issue, addiction's on the find yourself in the position of having to share a needle with another person, please take the following steps to ensure that you don't get infected. Suck water up to the top of the needle. And squirt it out. Suck water up to the top of the needle. And squirt it out. Suck water up to the top of the needle. And squirt it out. That's step one. Suck reach up to the top of the needle. And squirt it out. Suck reach up to the top of the needle. And squirt it out. Suck reach up to the top of the needle. And squirt it out.
And that was Lucky, or actually 15, from the album Lucky. And we're on the air now with attorney Kate Wells. Hi, Kate.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. It's Sunday good. Morning. I guess we're breaking into the football game here to try to hear what's going on with the more interesting game of holding the sheriff's office locally to account. And you are going to be trying to do that, aren't you?
Yeah, for the first time I actually have an action that's directly against Tracy. Most often the cases have been that Tracy has been derelict in his duties. At this point, this is actually something that has come directly from him.
Hmm. I know, I guess you've taken cases before concerning civil actions against his deputies.
Right.
And how does that usually go? Do you win some, lose some? How's the record on that?
I'm trying to think. As far as the sheriff's department, I believe that I have at least gotten a settlement out of, so I don't think I've lost any.
And how many cases are we talking about in the last decade, let's say?
Oh, geez.
Just
probably somewhere around 20.
20 cases. And typically, what kind of a case usually brings you into the fray here? What are these involved?
Well, generally, we're talking excessive force and some false arrest, I'd say the majority of them have been excessive force cases. Some deliberate disregard for medical treatment in the jail, which of course is under the sheriff's auspices. That's a pretty common theme, actually. They seem to be to not want to give any kind of medical treatment to those in need in the jail.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I'd say that makes up the most.
So excessive force, I mean, when most people hear the words excessive force, they think Rodney King or maybe the beating to death of this man. Was it in Ohio, was it, recently?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yet on the pages of the Santa Cruz Sentinel or the San Jose Mercury News or even the more so-called alternative papers like the Metro Santa Cruz or the Good Times or even the City on a Hill, you don't see any real, you don't see much in the way of discussion of these issues. I mean, you see when Happy John Dine gets shot, that produces a little, I guess, ripple, but then nobody got sued for that. Officer Connor Carey, I talked to him the other day, he's back on the force, he was doing Christmas duty, although I guess Officer Over, his partner, is gone. What is excessive force constituted in some of these cases? Are we talking about some attorney's thingy where your client's finger got sprained? Or are we talking about somebody really getting beaten up? Or what are we talking about?
Well, obviously it depends on the case. But, I mean, I think when you're talking about media coverage, that kind of leads us directly into this lawsuit that was just filed this week. You know, as I said, earlier, it's just kind of a microcosm of what's happening with the national media. Those in power are so arrogant and have so much power that they feel that they're free to go and threaten an independent radio station with cutting off any information if they don't fire someone who's critical of them. I think that is happening, and it's a shame. Getting to the excessive force, yeah, it is different from you know, case to case. I mean, I had one case where a guy was self-surrendering on a warrant, and Officer Persley, who is a bodybuilder, weightlifter, grabbed this guy's arm and wrenched it when the guy whimpered when he grabbed his arm, he wrenched it all the way up to his neck.
Take, let's say, in that case, to get what's his name, Deputy
Persley.
Persley to is he still on the force, by the way?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Mark Tracy
he's
was
now Sergeant Persley.
Now Sergeant, I see. He was promoted in response to
he was promoted. I think
action.
Yeah, and I don't think I think he already had been.
I guess.
But see, this is a thing that we have consistently talked about with Tracy. Tracy seems to have condoned this kind of action and condoned the best example I can think of is Jason Nielsen,
Deputy Nielsen
of the Pinto case.
Uh-huh.
Who
remind us of the quickly the facts of that case.
The facts of Pinto?
Right, that's the case of the fellow who was accused of attacking the deputy with a knife when he was running away or something?
Right. Actually,
he never found the knife.
Actually, he was accused of threatening Jason Nielsen with a knife, and which was never found, and this was only Nielsen's account, by the way. There were no other witnesses to what happened. And as a result, Nielsen shot this kid in the stomach.
And he was this was a Latino kid?
Yes.
And he was held in jail for a year or so?
I believe he's still in jail. I think they sent him to prison.
And he was convicted, but they what was the conviction for?
The conviction was for resisting.
Resisting arrest?
Yes.
And the original arrest was for?
A warrant.
A warrant. A warrant for murder or?
No. It was a drug warrant.
A drug warrant.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But the interesting part of that story is that back several years before, when Jason Nielsen was still a rookie, I had a personal experience with him in seeing a police report he wrote pursuant to an incident that happened in front of my house.
Involving the same Richard Quigley.
Involving Richard Quigley,
yeah.
Where Jason Nielsen just flat out lied in this report as a rookie, you know, which I find significant. You know, it's one thing when a cop is on the force forever and, you know, it finally just gets so frustrated that he can't do what he wants to do and he lies. But this guy was feeling free to lie as a rookie. And so at the time, we made complaints. We made internal affairs complaints, which I understand now, according to the county council, they're not really internal affairs complaints unless Tracy deems them to be internal affairs complaints. But at any rate, we did file complaints, and we got the result was that he was exonerated. Now, if you look up the definition of exonerated, it actually means, and legally it means, that, yeah, he did it, but that's okay.
Because it was in the course of his duties or some such thing?
They don't say why. They just say exonerated.
In other words, the actual act happened, but it was okay.
Yep. Yep.
And now, Nielsen, has there ever been a civil lawsuit of the kind that you mentioned before against Nielsen?
Nielsen has a lawsuit against him right now by Pinto.
And this is while Pinto is in jail.
Yep.
Isn't this unusual? If you're going to jail, doesn't this usually mean that you're likely to lose any lawsuits because you've already been convicted?
Well, I think that in his case, there is an appeal going, and I think that it's a really good chance that they will win this appeal because of all the shenanigans that went on in his trial.
So they'll eventually find he shouldn't have served any time at all after he served several years.
That is what I think will happen.
Now, in the typical, you're in this typical case like the one that you're taking for Richard Quigley,
mm-hmm.
who, by the way, for those who don't know, Richard Quigley is I call him an activist. I guess he calls himself a freedom fighter and an advocate. He's been concerned particularly with the helmet law. I first met him, and met you, for that matter, for the first time when you were defending the rights of people to serve free food and publicizing the absurdity and injustice of the Sandra Loringer case, the woman
right.
who was convicted of serving free food to the homeless and then sent to, for, 3 weeks to jail.
Yeah.
You were in front of the courthouse mm-hmm. tabling and selling T-shirts with the motto...
I am beyond rehabilitation.
Exactly, which is what she said to the judge when the judge said, we won't put you in jail if you promise and you'll never do this again. And she said, Your Honor, I believe I am beyond rehabilitation.
Yeah, she said, Your Honor, does that mean I have to obey all laws? And he said, well, yes. And she said, if it is against the law for me to feed my brother when he's hungry, then I am beyond rehabilitation.
An old judge addict sent her to jail.
Old judge addict sent her to jail.
Artichoke heart addict, and that's the reason I call him that.
Yeah. Well, I hope he had some sleepless nights over it. Unfortunately, I probably didn't, but...
yeah. Well, I know that you've been, how long have you been in Santa Cruz County doing these kinds of cases, Kate?
25 years. I've been here for 27, 28.
And I know that recently you got kind of you developed some medical problems that kind of took you off these cases.
That's correct.
And it was my understanding that I guess that this case was sufficiently concerned you. This the case that we're going to be talking about, and that actually we talked about a bit with Richard Quigley last Thursday. That I guess your medical condition has improved, but this is the first case you really jumped into since you took your leave of absence.
It has brought me out of my leave of absence, yes, I feel that this is an important, a hugely important case.
Well, I know that you were planning to make your home in Costa Rica or Canada after the Patriot Act passed. You're still around.
It's still a possibility.
yeah, well, we'll see what happens. Although the courts seem to be, at least some of the courts seem to be saying, if you're going to lock him up, you at least got to talk to a judge first. But, that has to go to the Supreme Court, I suppose, before...
Well, it's not a matter of what is necessarily happening. It's what can happen. And they like to say, so what that they can surveil what we're reading in the library. We haven't done it. That really makes me feel comfortable, any time that they justify being able to do it by saying, well, we don't do it, is that's a pretty weak justification.
Well, I talked about this on the air several weeks ago, that the claim that Ashcroft, our attorney general, made that he had not used the provision of the Patriot Act, I guess the Patriot Act, maybe it's one of the other acts, that allows the government to demand not merely reading lists of so-called suspected terrorists, but also if the librarian mentions this fact, she's guilty of a crime. She cannot tell the people that their reading lists are being looked at.
Right.
Ashcroft claimed this hadn't been done, but the Mountain View media, a small newspaper in Mountain View, and I guess then the Mercury News reported the story that just casually, yes, it had been done in a number of cases. Deputies of Ashcroft reported sort of in independent news stories unrelated to his statement. They just kind of had mentioned it as a matter of course.
Mm.
they hadn't cleared it with the boss, I guess, or the boss hadn't heard the bad news. So it is happening.
Yeah.
But anyway, Richard Quigley's case, I have it sitting here before me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a demand for a complaint for damages and injunctive relief for violation of civil rights. And
right.
The defendant is Sheriff Mark Tracy. The plaintiff is Richard Quigley. A plaintiff, who's a well-known activist, was engaged by talk radio KSCO to host a talk show Thursdays at noon and exercise his First Amendment rights in a manner critical of Tracy, in the manner in which Tracy administers the sheriff's department. And on or about December 16th, plaintiff learned Tracy violated his rights by sending a representative of the sheriff's department to speak with the KSCO station manager to persuade the station to terminate his talk show. And, in fact, that kind of led to what he calls, I guess, courteously a leave of absence, but what seems to be, at least temporarily, a termination of his services. Is that accurate?
It's a forced leave of absence, they're saying, until this legal mess is cleared up.
So, in other words, the KSCO didn't want him to do this lawsuit, I guess. Huh?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, and this is a place where Mr. Quigley and I diverge in our opinions. He is not willing to blame the ownership of KSCO for what's happening. As far as I'm concerned, they are just as guilty as Mark Tracy in buckling under that kind of pressure. Again, you know, that's what's happened in the media all over the country. And they're you know, bowing down to Tracy in this circumstance, I think, is absolutely despicable.
Well, I know that Richard and I also disagreed on that point. I was quite critical of the Zwirlings who run KSCO. I've been critical. I like Michael Zwirling in other ways, and I dislike him in some ways, but
mm-hmm.
I don't like the censorship he exercises over KSCO. I don't like the censorship that some of our people here at the Free Radio Santa Cruz sometimes exercise over Free Radio. So I'm, you know, I have my differences with people who are, you know, in positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I remember that a merchant called in after the show on Thursday to say that she supported Richard Quigley's position, which is distinct from your position, and my position was that, you know, KSCO could hardly be blamed for simply protecting its own financial interests because advertisers would withdraw their advertising. The Aptos Chamber of Commerce would blackball KSCO. They'd lose lots of money. That Tracy is a very dangerous man. She didn't say this. Quigley did. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you don't want to cross Tracy, you know, and he understood completely. He'd been given many, many months of free reign, fairly free reign. They didn't let him play the tape of his girlfriend's getting mm-hmm. beaten up, mm-hmm. which he recorded from, I guess, who was the deputy involved in that?
That was McAuliffe and Deverell.
Uh-huh. Who are still on the force?
Deverell is retired. Just a minute. It wasn't Deverell. It was Hartness.
Hartness. Mm-hmm.
Hartzner.
Got to get these
Hartzner,
names right.
Excuse me.
Lawsuit.
Joe Hartzner mm-hmm. and William McAuliffe. William McAuliffe is now terrorizing people in some community up in Idaho. He left the force. And Hartzner is the one, is the deputy who stole the fireworks from the property room and held a big party at the county building for which he was fired
mm-hmm.
and then reinstated by the Civil Service Commission after a something like a
so you can get fired for firework. You can fired for fireworks, but if you beat up Quigley's
it's
close
okay.
friend,
you, that's okay.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess you know you got to have some standards here.
Yeah.
She, you know, her opinion was, this caller that I spoke to, was that, you know, Richard mm-hmm. is really quite right that you can't expect a radio station, which is a business,
mm-hmm.
to risk losing money by losing its advertisers because, the sheriff's department can put all kinds of unholy pressures on you, and so can the Aptos Chamber of Commerce, which, by the way, for those who are interested, the Aptos Chamber of Commerce is having a raffle tomorrow at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, a special raffle, and I think it's open to the public. It's at 5:30, and it is, let me get this, it's in front of the apparel shop. For those who want to check it out, it is the Aptos Shoes and Apparel at 5:30, and for those who want to call the Chamber of Commerce, because apparently the Chamber of Commerce has also been concerned about Richard's behavior on the air, and I think they probably have been pressuring Michael Zwirling of KSCO, the owner of KSCO. The phone number to call the Aptus Chamber of Commerce is 479-9463, 479-9463. And I would encourage you to be polite and courteous, but perhaps a few hard questions might not be in order. Out of order,
might be in order, yeah. Right.
Might be in order, yes. Might not be out of order.
Well, you're always out of order, Robert.
Well, my order is a little confused here. But looking at the orders,
okay.
you're trying to give the court here.
Let me comment on
sure.
what you have to say about this fear of some sort of reprisal. You know, fear is what has put us in the position we're in right now in terms of our global position, in terms of all of these Patriot Act provisions where we have literally given up the Bill of Rights for the sake of quote-unquote safety. You know, Governor Dean said it, and I stand by him wholeheartedly. We are not one iota more safe than we were on September 10th, the day before the World Trade Center, and yet we've given up all of our rights. I mean, so many of them that it's a frightening situation. Fear, I think, is probably the root of all evil. And as Ben Franklin said, and I will paraphrase what he said, those who would give up those who would give up their freedoms for safety deserve neither freedom nor safety,
and probably won't get it either, actually.
And so, yeah, of course they were going to be looking at some sort of pressure from the merchants and others. But my God, if that's all the guts that our local media has, you know, it's pretty frightening, and it's probably the news filter that's happening is probably even worse than I thought.
And by the way, if you want to call KSCO and tell them what you think, Mr. Zwirling, what you think of this decision to censor one of the few outspoken voices on free radio with respect to police matters. I mean, there are some, I suppose, outspoken voices on other issues, but on police matters, I only know of one, and that's Richard Quigley.
Mm-hmm.
The call-in, the comment line, which is not usually broadcast, but which is a public number, is 429-2222, 429-2222. I called KSCO yesterday because I wanted to make sure that they were, in fact, broadcasting the news of the lawsuit that you had filed, I guess, on Friday.
Uh-huh.
And I was told that they had, although when I tuned in, I couldn't hear it, but I'm assuming that they did. And however, the fellow that I reached said, you know, he expected Richard to be on next week, and I said, haven't you heard? He's been put on leave of absence, indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, I hadn't heard that, but apparently he has.
Oh, my gosh.
Kind of keeping it quiet in the station, I guess. Even the people there don't know what's going on. 429-2222 is a number to call for the what's called the KSCO comment line. That's the one that Zwirling consults himself, 429-2222. Or if you want to call into any of their talk shows, you might call 479-1080. And, of course, KSCO is at AM 1080. That's where they are on the band, AM 1080. 479-1080 during any of the talk shows, and you can do that during the noon hour and say, where the hell is Richard Quigley?
Right.
What have you done with him? Are you Mark Tracy's punk now? Is that
yeah.
the plan? You know,
yeah.
I mean.
Well, and again, getting back to this issue of pressure, you know, I have people say that to me all the time. You know, oh yeah, I the deputy beat me up and I didn't do anything, but I'm scared to do anything about it. You know, that is an attitude that will enable and in fact encourage that person to beat somebody else up. I have to say that one of my proudest accomplishments is getting rid of a Capitola PD officer by the name of Murphy off the force, and because of three lawsuits that I filed where he literally beat the socks off of these people, one of them a woman, and he is now no longer on the force.
When did that happen? When did he leave the force?
About 3-4 months ago.
Huh. Well, congratulations.
And so, you know, the only way that we're going to fight what's happening here is to stand up and say, I'm not going to take it. And believe me, the best protection they could get is by joining this lawsuit. So that's how I feel about it.
Well, by the way, if people want to hear the past shows where Quigley has been, and I would say he would consider it, and I would say too, constructively critical of the police. I mean, Quigley is not an anti-police person. I mean, quite the contrary.
By far not.
I mean, he favors the war in Iraq. He has positions that I would call extremely conservative or
Absolutely.
Even reactionary. But you know, he does not. He believes that, as I understand it. You've talked to him a lot. Why don't you give me what you think his position is?
I mean, Richard, the beginning of all of this was the fact that Richard ran for sheriff. And in fact, in his pursuit of the office of sheriff, he won the support of a huge number of the deputies. He won so much support that they ended up not supporting any candidate rather than to come out publicly and support Richard. Richard has, and you know, this is, I won't name names, but I would say that probably more than not of the deputies are thrilled to death with what Richard is doing, who are sick and tired of these bad deputy sheriffs making a bad reputation for all of the rest of them. Richard is a Goldwater Republican, and he was born in Arizona, and he still is very strong in his hands-off attitude towards government, and obviously that includes law enforcement, and so he's a civil libertarian, and if I had to name a party that most closely resembled his feelings right now, would probably be the Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm.
But he is by no means anti-law enforcement. He is very close friends with several deputies, and is admired by others that probably don't even know him. So that's you know, anybody who claims that he is anti-law enforcement doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I think he's often very very fastidious about really insisting he supports a good law enforcement, and he really feels he's doing his criticism of specific officers with an eye to making sure that the vast majority of good deputies or good police officers don't suffer the same tarred brush.
Exactly.
But of course, I mean, I don't have that position. I think these police departments are corruptive of individuals. I think that individuals can come to the police department just, you know, being good people, and they get corrupted by the authority they have, and that it happens almost habitually, like the city council members, frankly.
Well, I think it has to do a lot with what attracts them to the job. You know, I've said over and over again that In my mind, it's a very close call between becoming a gang member and becoming a cop. You know, I mean, it's just you know, it would be easy for these guys to fall either direction. That's I mean, and I'm painting, like you say, a broad brush here, and you know, I apologize to all of those good officers out there who understand, you know, what their job is, but yeah, I think that in fact I have heard described you know how the police paid out a space on the curb that shows that's where they're supposed to park.
Oh right,
I've heard that called tagging.
That was Sergeant Deverell, or
yeah.
Right.
So,
he painted his own space at the Aptus Ranch at the
right.
North Shopping Center. So Richard Quigley parked in it, pointing out that
well,
it's not.
Well, no, he checked first. He went to the county, This is what started the entire mess down at Rancho Del Mar. Well, not all of it, but yeah, he checked with the county and said, under what authority is he painting out this space for the sheriff's department? And the county said, none.
Well, no, he just likes to paint. The man is a frustrated artist, you see. That's the thing.
Right, so Richard started parking in his space, and of course, there was nothing he could do about it. So
maybe this kind of ties in with point 10 of the lawsuit that you have here, which is not merely has Richard been essentially fired from KSCO, put on indefinite leave of absence via pressure via Tracy, because Tracy didn't like what Richard was saying about him and some of the officers, but that Tracy, I'm quoting your lawsuit, has waged an ongoing campaign of harassment against the plaintiff due to the fact the plaintiff ran for the office of the sheriff of the county. And due to the fact that plaintiff has been openly critical of Tracy in the manner in which Tracy administers the department, which this includes the solicitation or condonation or condoning of false and defamatory sheriff's office reports regarding Quigley, reports containing false accusations about Quigley, falsely accusing Quigley of having committed crimes such as public drunkenness, gun running, license plate swapping, and stalking, maintaining a secret internal affairs file containing false, defamatory, and derogatory information, and then the solicitation and condoning of the arrest and beating of the Quigley's girlfriend on false charges. We talked about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about this history at all and what these sound like serious matters. Why has no lawsuit been filed before? What finally pushed you both over the edge on this one?
Well, that's a good question. I think that this was the first time we could really implicate Sheriff Tracy in a direct manner. All of these other things have been things that, like I said, he's either solicited or condoned. I don't know which. For instance, again, we go back to this Jason Nielsen and his in this police report that about Richard, that he was so drunk that he couldn't. He couldn't stand up, and that he had released him into my custody. You know, Richard is a 25-year, maybe 30 years now, 30-year member of AA. He not only does not drink, he hates alcohol, and we had declarations from the clerk in the store who had absolutely nothing to, no axe to grind against him, that it was clear that Richard Quigley was not intoxicated in any manner. There's some confidential informant that they are saying saw Richard and his girlfriend exchanging guns and license plates. Some confidential informant. That report sits in his file. You know, the secret file came to light again in the Pinto case when they tried to deep six the complaints against Nielsen. And would have been successful had I not tipped off Bill Maintner ahead of time that there were these complaints. But when they successfully suppressed my testimony and Richard's testimony, we then said to Maintner, well, what about the other two declarations, which were the clerk of the store and her boyfriend, who were witnesses to what went on?
Maintner was a defense attorney for the Pinto case?
For the Pinto case. So Maintner went back to Judge Danner and said, well, what about these other two complaints? And Danner said, what two complaints? And then out of nowhere, these complaints appeared. And, well, not, I won't say out of nowhere. They appeared out of some secret internal affairs file that was labeled Richard Quigley. Now, what in the hell is he doing with an internal affair? And he's never been a sheriff. He's never, you know, there's no reason for them to be keeping some secret file on him.
So it's customary for IA to keep files on all its deputies because they can be, you know,
exactly
complained against. But
right.
You don't keep files on citizens.
Private citizens. And the latest episode... The latest episode is a report done by, I don't know if she's a deputy or she's a sergeant, Christie, who is now head of the Aptos substation, who has written an extensive report involving Richard Quigley and Jerry Henry.
And Scott Rhodes, yeah, she's a sergeant.
She's a sergeant, okay. And in this report, she makes terrible accusations against Richard Quigley. and which are direct quotes from a report, an investigative report done by this a deputy named Steve Smith. So Quigley knows Steve Smith, and he contacted him. He said, you know, what is this all about? Because he, of course, knew nothing about this investigative report. And at that time, Deputy Smith, or whatever he is, I don't know whether he's sergeant or what, informed Richard that those allegations had been completely exonerated or cleared of those allegations in his addendum to the report. And Sergeant Christie just fails to mention that Deputy Smith had found that all of these charges were groundless. Nevertheless, this report has been sent around. We know at least it's been sent to Adult Protective Services with all of these false accusations, with nothing in there to say that Steve Smith had found that all of these charges were groundless.
And indeed, there is Christie has recommended four charges be filed against Jerry Henry, including trespass with intent to interfere with a business, public nuisance, disturbing the peace, fighting words, and conspiracy. This is for Jerry's effrontery in going in to get a cup of coffee at the Aptos Coffee Ranch Roasting Company, right?
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see, you know, that Richard is challenging Tracy. Do you think this is going to have an impact on Jerry Henry's case? I mean, I know that he hasn't got a case pending at the moment, but Jerry had to go through 3 years or 4 years of exile, months of trial, $200,000 bail, a $100,000 bail.
For trespass.
Imprisonment
for misdemeanor
for a misdemeanor a nonviolent trespass, mm-hmm. And actually, I guess he points out that they threatened that if that bail was paid and if he went back, they were going to make it $250,000.
Right. Well, that was one of those circumstances, and I've seen this happen over and over again, where they set the bail. His mother went down to post bail, and as soon as they figured out that she had the money to post bail, they upped it. And they kept upping it until she couldn't pay, and then they used that as pressure to get a stay-away order from Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, that they would only release him on his own recognizance if he promised not to go to the shopping center.
And we're talking about Jerry Henry, but the point here also is that Quigley and Henry have been associated together, indeed confused in some of these reports. You apparently can't tell one person with a beard from another, and even apparently Richard doesn't have a beard anymore, but he looks like he has a beard.
They
got an old
beard.
Photo there on the paper yesterday.
Yeah, he has a small beard now.
He has a small beard. He's growing it again. I guess I'm out of date. Well, is this going to affect Henry's case, do you think? I mean, I know Jerry is very much afraid he's going to be hauled in again on another. His hometown of Aptos has essentially barred him from coming back to the shopping center because of his ministering activities to young people, and then his protest when he was, I guess, harassed by the roasting company and by what's it called, the department store there.
Gottschalk's,
right. And when the new sheriff's substation moved in, which Quigley was pointing out on the air, he regards as being instrumental in this anti-riffraff campaign. How much is the anti-riffraff campaign a part of this thing with Tracy's apparent war on Quigley? What's this about?
Well, you know, it's really interesting to draw parallels between what's happening in downtown Santa Cruz and what's happening at the Aptos. To Aptos Shopping Center. You know, as far as I'm concerned, our police force in Santa Cruz and our sheriff's department in the county have been turned into private security forces for the merchants. And that's basically what's happened down there. You know, it's a matter of a lot of people who are prejudiced against people who look different. like Jerry Henry, and I refuse to take the time to find out more about Jerry Henry, and if they did, they'd be pinning medals on him for, you know, getting countless young people off of heroin. You know, instead, you know, they look at his appearance and immediately determine that he's, you know, a bad person, and are, you know, we go back to this fear thing again. They're fearful, you know, and so out of that comes this we're going to run these people off because they're interfering with our business thing, and it's. You know, it's a sad state of affairs. It's classism, and the problem is that this classism. You know, in other words, if they were treating him this way because he was black, there would be something he could do about it. But they're not. They're treating him this way because he appears to be. He's not. He appears to be poor. That's why this is happening. He appears to be of a low economic status, not worthy of being in front of Gottschalk's or the coffee roasting company.
And you're talking about Jerry Henry now, not Richard Quigley.
I'm talking about Jerry Henry.
Right.
And because of that, they are pretty much free to take these kind of actions against him because the courts have consistently refused to consider economic status as a suspect class. In other words, you can discriminate against somebody because they're poor. You can't discriminate against someone for their race, religion, sex, that sort of thing, but you can discriminate because they're poor. And because of that is what has enabled everything to happen in downtown Santa Cruz that's happened and everything that's happening in Aptos.
Well, what about, as Jerry Henry has pointed out when he's come on this show, the UNRRA Civil Rights Act? Doesn't that provide some protection for people from arbitrary discrimination based on personal characteristics, geographical origin, physical attributes, individual beliefs, sex, race, color, religion, ancestry, disability or medical condition, and not apparently limited to that, because there was a case of the fellow who was looked like a hippie, was that Pruneyard are we talking about?
Right, Pruneyard decision, yeah.
I always tell Jerry kind of skeptically, you're not going to get anywhere with UNRRA civil rights because it isn't used much, and what attorney is going to take it on and requires the DA to sue? What are the chances for Jerry or others to stand up under the UNRRA Civil Rights Act and get some kind of relief?
You know, I've found consistently that trying to get any relief out of state court, which you'd have to bring that kind of an action in state court, is futile. You know, the reason I bring the actions I do in federal court is because, you know, like it or not, federal judges are appointed for life. They are not prone to the kind of political pressures that our local judges are prone to. So having to bring an UNRRA Act violation in state court would mean we'd be in front of Danner or Yontz or,
Mark Tracy's colleagues, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't hold out much hope for it. You know, to show you how just mean and nasty they have been to Jerry Henry. He came to me one day, and this is a couple of years ago. He came to me with this notice he'd received in the mail that his driver's license had been suspended. Summarily suspended, no hearing, nothing. Now, Jerry Henry, I have driven with Jerry Henry, and Jerry Henry, I can't stand to drive with him because he is the most careful and slow driver I have ever seen in my life. He's never had a citation in his life. He's never done anything, you know, he's a very, very careful driver. So I suspected that maybe Sergeant Hemingway, who was at the time the Aptos substation sheriff, had something to do with it. So I petitioned the DMV to find out what happened, and sure enough, Sergeant Hemingway had Jerry Henry's license, summarily suspended. And the reason he gave for it is that Jerry Henry refused to move his vehicle on a particular date. The reason Jerry had refused to move his vehicle on that particular date was that he was giving food to a homeless man, a crippled homeless man. It was raining, and he had pulled his vehicle close to the overhang at Rancho Del Mar in order that this man, who was in a wheelchair, did not have to go out in the rain, and he could give him food. Now, we demanded a hearing, of course, with the DMV, and a wonderful hearing officer came from Santa Clara. Oh, and by the way, we in the meantime, before this hearing, we watched that spot where Jerry Henry had parked, and took photographs of countless vehicles, including sheriff's cars, parked in that same spot without any kind of reprimand from the sheriff's department. So we went into this hearing, and we told our side, and then they brought Hemingway in, who was shaking like a leaf. His excuse was because he was shaking so hard that the hearing officer said something to him, like, you know, what's, you know, something the matter? And he told the hearing officer that he was on medication. Presumably he was in his patrol car and drove away. I guess you know, he felt that he could maneuver his vehicle and carry a gun even though he was on medication. But at any rate, the hearing officer at the end of this little hearing looked at Jerry and said, "Mr. Henry, I have nothing but respect for you and for what you are doing, and for if there's anything I can ever do to help you to feed the homeless or whatever," he said, "I would expect you to please call me." And he then said, "I'm going to do something I have never done before." And he picked up the telephone, and he called DMV in Sacramento, and he said, "I want you to reinstate this man's license plate, I mean, his driver's license, immediately," and he handed it to Jerry, and he said, "Mr. Henry, you can drive home." Now, if that wasn't just nasty, spiteful action to have his driver's license suspended summarily without even his knowledge because he was feeding a homeless man.
Did Sergeant Hemingway ever suffer any consequences because of this?
No.
Was a complaint made about his behavior?
I'm sure a complaint was made.
By the way, for those who are interested, at 11 o'clock, if you're hungry, there is a meal at the Loudon Nelson Center done by the Potter's Hand, probably one of the best meals in town all day. If you're poor, I mean, all week, you get bacon, you get eggs. I mean, it's a very unusual Sunday meal. Go there if you're hungry. Check it out if you happen to be listening to a radio. Starts now. We're talking to Kate Wells, who's attorney for Richard Quigley, a friend of Jerry Henry, and who has recently, I guess it's 3 days ago, 2 days ago, filed a lawsuit against Sheriff Mark Tracy for violating the civil rights of Richard Quigley by pressuring his firing or his indefinite layoff from KSCO as a commentator, as well as a campaign of harassment against him. What kind of relief are you expecting to get, and how long is it likely to take, Kate?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is move in for an injunction. You know, to stop the harassment. I suspect that I will be taking a few depositions first to solidify our position, and then moving in for this injunction, which you know, will forbid Sheriff Tracy and any of his deputies from taking any further harassing actions against Mr. Quigley. I'm hoping that we can get them to issue the federal court to issue this injunction. So that will be the first move, and then from there, I think you know, I don't want to expose too much of what my tactic is here, but You know, I think that very early on in the lawsuit, we will be moving for summary judgment on the issue of liability.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long does this usually take? I mean, when will your hearing will be in San Jose, right?
Right.
For the injunction, about what month do you expect this will come about?
Well, let's see. You know, the complaint has not yet been served, and because of the holidays, you know, there'll probably be some delays, and then I'm going to be out of the state for some of January. So I have co-counsel in a trial, a Fourth Amendment trial down in L.A. and Central District Court, federal court. Starting at the end of January, so you know it's I you know it's hard to say.
So probably sometime in the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. As quickly as we can go about it, we're not we don't want to drag this thing on forever.
What do you think your chances of success are?
Well, you know, if we hadn't received the result from Judge White that we did in your case. Your First Amendment, your Heil Hitler case,
actually,
I would say...
That's Heil Fitzmaurice. Actually.
Yeah, Heil Fitzmaurice, right. Or Heil Krohn, actually.
Yeah, actually, yeah, Mayor Krohn with a silent gesture indicating you're acting like a bunch of fascists.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
We thought was First Amendment protected, but we're still waiting for the, I guess, the appeals
Ninth
court
Circuit.
Ruling.
Yeah.
Right.
I would say that, you know, it was a slam dunk, but I thought that case was a slam dunk, and obviously Judge White found against us. So, you know, it's going to depend a lot on you know, we've been assigned a magistrate, Seaborg, who just, by the way, presided over the Blue Lagoon trial.
How'd he do on that?
He was, I hesitate to say. I hesitate to say because if anybody's out there listening, they probably will immediately ding him. But he was very fair. I think he was extremely careful in all of his rulings, and he has been the settlement judge in several of my other cases, and I've found him to be really, really good.
The Blue Lagoon, of course, is the case where a Santa Cruz police were found guilty of harassing a bar and a bar owner, and I guess that may have been the situation that prevented Deputy Chief Sapone from becoming Chief Sapone.
Well, you know, my ego would like to say yes, that's a lot of what had to do with it. You know, I'm just really glad. I mean, I don't know too much about Scary, but...
That's our new police chief, Howard Scary.
It's hard to imagine that it could be any worse than Deputy Chief Sapone. So you have to realize that at least a number of the jurors in that trial wanted to award us punitive damages.